Hello, I'm an addict. My name is Jane.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, and I'm work at the NA World International headquarters in Chatsworth, California, and I am their public relations manager. And Clarice reminded me, 20 minutes or I'm going to cut you. So hopefully she won't have to say, shh. Anyway, she asked a little for me to qualify for a minute to humanize it. So I have 31 years clean in NA. Which, when I really look back on it, is kind of amazing because it was the commissioner from the Department of Corrections in Connecticut in 1984 who mandated me to NA, told me I can't go to AA. I guess he thought I'd try to be too slick or something. And if I didn't comply, I was going back to the fine woman's prison in the state. So it was quite the motivation because the one thing I knew, even if I didn't know I'd be clean this long, was I was not going back to that fine institution. I've been with NA World Services in Chatsworth for 10 years, 8 years in this position. I actually started and we had created for the members a public relations handbook to speak of interactions with corrections, drug courts, treatment, phone line, hospitals, and how to give a presentation to professionals. And prior to that, I was of service to the Fellowship of NA. I served on their literature committee, past literature chair, served on their board of directors, and served on their world board, ending in 2004 as their board chair. And I actually think I was thinking before the workshop started that cooperation with AA and other 12 steps began for NA in 1953. If it wasn't for AA cooperating with the drug addicts of the time, NA wouldn't be here. You know, the members back then realized their singleness of purpose and didn't want the drug addicts diluting that within the meetings out in L.A. So, of course, we were born in 1953. And I'm really grateful, one, to AA, two, honored to be at your 80th celebration. That's, you know, I thought ours was special 2 years ago at 60. But this is quite amazing. We've never had these many addicts in attendance. And for those who may not be familiar, NA is in 132 countries. We speak 74 languages in meetings and have 68,000 meetings a week. And I will say, having had the privilege of traveling, it's really pretty special to be able to go, even if I don't speak the language. And I'm sure you, for those who may go to France or any country, but it's the feeling that you feel in the meetings that you don't necessarily need to speak the language because it's what we call the therapeutic value. You know, you just feel that energy, even if you're not understanding the words totally, because even with translations, you miss a lot. Anyway, I was also thinking about how we cooperate, and I looked at it and broke it into general topics so I could at least maybe have a frame for me. And how we've cooperated, that in my experience with other 12-step organizations, is I was sharing with a man from Texas that a few years ago, AA General Service Office sent their CPC coordinator. We sent our own, me and a colleague of mine, to the National Association of Drug Court Professionals. And there was a couple of their board of directors and the president of that association. And the point of the cooperation had to do with not clouding the message of recovery of either fellowship. That if, and educating that if the drug court has an addict, send them to NA. If a drug court has an alcoholic, send them to AA. And I remember shortly after that, the General Service Office sent out a big notification on your singleness of purpose, just as a reminder. You know, and I really will say the woman made a point, and I probably wasn't as clear until the CPC person at that time had said the real reason behind it is if a drunk comes in off the street and they're sitting, having a cup of coffee and getting a cookie, whether they stay or not, no one knows. But the first person who shares talks about the pills. The second person who shares talks about cocaine. Another person talks about just drugs in general. Well, what's this alcoholic going to do but go leave the rooms because they cannot identify? And it was crystal clear to me on what could happen to that alcoholic because I had worked in treatment in Connecticut before moving to California. And the AA meetings were really clear in Connecticut. You know, my fellows would come back and they would complain, AA kicked us out because we were talking about drugs. I said, no, they're for alcoholics. Whether you want to or not, you better go to NA. And we've had a couple face-to-face with fellowship meetings where we share experiences. I know NA hosted one, and GSO was there, and CA was there, and Debtors Anonymous was there. Others were invited. Perhaps they couldn't attend. But it was really to exchange common practices for common issues. You know, members are saying, our message is getting cleared because too many addicts are coming in, or what are you doing with this or that? And it was just an exchange because we are all 12-step. And our fellowships carry our own messages, but it doesn't mean we might not have common, issues that we can exchange. And then another way we cooperate is when we're at professional conferences. There's two conferences that I attend, NADCP and ASAM, the American Society of Addiction Medicine. And often AA has their table there, and NA has our table there. And I know last year at NADCP, or 2 years ago, the AA folks were not at the booth. And the counselors and the drug court judges were coming up asking me questions. The best I could do, whether I felt I could honestly answer or not, was to say, why don't you stop back in 30 minutes? They just stepped away. I know their literature's here, and they said you can have it. And then when the AA folks came back, I let them know people were coming. But I didn't try to speak on behalf of your fellowship. That's not my role. Any more than when I stepped away and came back, you know, AA supported me because we were side by side. And then at ASAM this year, I met a fellow, and we were in Austin, and he was sharing how he helps members get to the right fellowship, which has also been my experience. If I'm in an NA meeting and there is a drunk in there, I will more than welcome them. But I will also inform them that they may feel and identify better in AA. Even, you know, because for me, I don't want the person to die. You know, by just not being able to feel a sense of belonging and identification. You know, if the person chooses not to go there, well, that's their choice. But I also think it's my responsibility to let them know there's a fellowship that they may be able to identify with better. Even when I had a sponsee who had a gambling problem, I was like, I have no experience. I don't gamble. So I suggested she go to GA try out a GA meeting because it's not in my experience. And for me, sponsorship is experience, strength, and hope. It's not one of giving advice. That's how I learned it. And with service committees, I know that many of our members in NA, I don't know about AA, will get an opportunity to participate at a health fair, a local health fair, a local conference. And they'll call. Is it okay if we go if AA's there? Yes, it's quite okay. But they don't know. They don't want to do anything wrong. You know, they want to be good recovering members, but they have no experience to know whether this is okay or not. So that's another way I find that we provide the information to the members, but we also teach them how to cooperate when they, you know, it's not something they've done before. And the other example that I have experience with is we get calls from members about, can we hold a meeting in an AA clubhouse? They're willing to rent us the space. And I know of many meetings in AA clubhouse that are NA. But as long as our traditions and steps are hung, as long as the message is perfectly clear that this is an NA meeting, it's listed that way. Because there's, like, well, we have Spirit of Studio 12 right near me, and they have several fellowships. But we're on a bulletin board. You know when the AA meeting is, you know when the NA meeting is, you know when the Arminian speaking meeting is. You know, it's very clear. And since I've been to the NA meeting there, it's a clear NA message of recovery. And I'm thinking it must be the same with AA. I don't know what else. How much time do I have? Oh, I only have two more minutes. And let's see. Well, then I will thank everyone for listening. It's truly been an honor. I don't really even want to think, no matter what I said about our stats in NA, I don't believe, and we're going to Orlando in 3 years, that we'd ever hit 62,000. This is, like, mind-boggling to me. You know, I've never seen so many sober alcoholics in my life. Anyway, congratulations on your 80 years.
Amazing lady. She was absolutely great. And she said all the right things, and we were happy. You know, AA has a way of allowing anybody or anybodies who wish to start a 12-step fellowship to use our steps and traditions, provided that they only change the name of the problem, so that if it's Narcotics Anonymous, if it's Gamblers Anonymous, if it's Debtors Anonymous, if it's Overeaters Anonymous, if it's Sex and Drug Addict, Love Addicts Anonymous. I mean, there are more than I could list. But we cooperate with our friends because we know that this disease takes so many turns and that many people need to do more than sometimes one fellowship. And so we encourage cooperation. We need to know that we could send somebody to NA rather than let them go out in the street because we don't allow them in our meeting. And I had the privilege to host a World Service meeting a few years ago, and it was a new country, and the lady was a first-time delegate from this area, from the new country, and her husband was a gambler. And we were privileged to send him to Gamblers Anonymous while she went with us to AA and was able to share what her country needed in AA, and her husband was able to get recovery in Gamblers Anonymous. And I'd like to introduce you to Bob W. from California, who will share a little bit about Gamblers Anonymous. Thank you.
Thank you, Cookie. My name is Bob W., and I am a compulsive gambler. And I've chosen to make a bet in 32 years, 3 months, and 3 days today. I use the word chosen because every morning when I wake up, I have a choice to gamble or not to gamble, and I've been choosing not to gamble. This is my second time on this Gamblers Anonymous program. The first time I only lasted 7.5 months. I had 5 loan sharks. They look like these 5 guys right here. I had 5 loan sharks I was into, and I was playing juice, or VIG we called it. Anyway, that's the interest, anywhere from 10% a week to 10% a month. And it exceeded my take-home pay every week. The interest did. The juice did. And I had to do something about it, and I came to get, and you know, after 7.5 months, I got it all paid off, and where was I again? I was back out there again. But I was lucky. It was only for 17 days, and I came back, and it's been over 32 years today. First thing I have to say is thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. I said it because without Alcoholics Anonymous, there would be no Gamblers Anonymous. Gamblers Anonymous would not exist today. And the guy that started Gamblers Anonymous was a guy named Jim W., who was an alcoholic. And it's funny, you got Bill W. started AA, Jim W. started GA. I'm Bob W. What should I start? I should start something. I'm going to give you a little history. First of all, I have to tell you, I've been on the board of directors, or we call the Board of Regents, for 14 years over the past 32 years. We're only allowed to spend now it's 2 years. It used to be 1 year, and you have to sit out for a year. And I've been chairman 6 times, 6 of those years. I also became a trustee back in the 80s, and I served one term as a trustee. Trustee, we have 140 trustees today. And the trustees, they go over the literature, and they change little words like as to is and things. To me, it's ridiculous. But anyhow, when I first went to a trustee meeting back in the mid-80s, I was objecting to something. I said, that's not the way it should be. And the guy, the chairman, looked at me and says, who are you? And I says, I'm Bob W. He says, are you a trustee or a former trustee? I said, no. He said, sit down and shut your mouth. So I said, what do you mean? He says, you can't even talk in this meeting unless you're a trustee or a former trustee. I said, that's not fair. And they ended up kicking me out of the room. But a couple of other members helped me out. And I decided I would be a trustee one time just to get a voice in the trustee meeting. And I ran for trustee, and I became a trustee for 2 years. And I hated it. And I said, I'm not doing this anymore. And for the next 15 years, I kept going to the trustee meetings, and I would talk and say what was on my mind and stuff like that, but I wouldn't be a trustee. And in 2002, they were having elections for chairman, and somebody nominated me. So I said, just out of it, I said, okay, you want to nominate me? Fine, I'll run. And I won. So here I was, chairman of the Board of Trustees, an organization that I didn't even want to be part of. And I'm chairman of this thing. So I was chairman for 2 years, and I got through it. And I'm also president of the California Council on Problem Gambling, which is a state council that I have to keep 2 hats. I have to keep them separate because the council and Gamblers Anonymous are 2 separate entities, and we can't we have help with the council, but Gamblers Anonymous can't send people to the council for help and stuff like that. There's a lot of rules and regulations I'm not comfortable with, but we handle it. We give you a little history of Gamblers Anonymous. 1955. In the summer, Jim W., who started GA, and 3 other AA, 3 AA members with gambling problems, started an organization called the Alchemist Society. AL was for alcoholics, GAM was for gamblers, and US was for us, the Alchemist Society. Anyhow, this meeting, the second meeting, only Jim W. showed up. The other 3 went back to gambling, so Jim was by himself. So nothing happened, really. Anyhow, in the spring of 1956, Jim and 3 other members of friends of Jim's, who were also AA members, started another meeting at Jim's house. They called that the apartment meeting. It was never Gamblers Anonymous yet. It was just the apartment meeting. And after only 3 meetings, this failed also. It wasn't going anywhere. A few months later, Jim W. and his wife, Sybil. Sybil was very active in Alcoholics Anonymous. She actually ran the Los Angeles office of Alcoholics Anonymous. I heard her speak one time. Very good lady. Anyhow, she got a call, Sybil did, from a person that had a gambling problem and wanted to do something about his gambling problem and didn't know who to turn to. So she put him in touch with her husband, Jim. And Jim and this man whose name was Sam J. would go out to coffee and talk about gambling and decide and try to keep each other from going back to gambling. And this lasted for a few months. Anyhow, in August of 1957, an unnamed woman, they call her the unnamed woman because they don't know her name, so she's the unnamed woman. She called the internet. She called also the office there of Alcoholics Anonymous about her husband who had a gambling problem. So Sybil told Jim, go see if you can help this lady. Talk to her husband. So Jim went over there, got to talk to her husband, and her husband, if you know what the word complete denial, he was in complete denial. He didn't have a gambling problem. He just liked to gamble, and he wasn't going to quit, and so on and so forth. Finally, Jim gave up on him, and as he was leaving, his wife approached Jim and said, listen, I know somebody I think can help us. He has an article in the Los Angeles Examiner. He has a television program. I think he could maybe advertise it a little or give you some help. So Jim says, anything that'll help, that sounds really good. So an article came out, and in this article, the man's name was Paul Coates. They wrote the article. He mentioned Gamblers Anonymous. That's the first time Gamblers Anonymous was ever mentioned because he never called it Gamblers Anonymous before then. But on the very same day, the television program was the next day. When the television program aired, Jim W. and a friend of his put bags over their heads, little eyelids, you know, and earlids, because they wanted to be anonymous. And a man by the Ray M., who was to turn out later to be the Dr. Bob of GA. Ray M. had just come back from 4 days of heavy gambling in Las Vegas, and he was really depressed, but his daughter talked him into watching the Paul Coates show. And he watched it, and they talked about the first meeting. It was going to be Friday, September 13th, Friday the 13th, at this particular place. I'm very superstitious, 13. I see 13 people in the room. I want to leave. But anyhow, Friday the 13th, and funny enough, 13 people showed up. Can you imagine that? But of the 13 people, 7 were gamblers, 2 were wives, and 4 were alcoholic friends of Jim, just there to support Jim. So that very first meeting, and Ray M. was one of those first people to come. Ray M. also holds the distinction of being the first one to fall off, because he fell off a couple of days later. But he came back for the very second meeting. And he wrote most of the literature that Gamblers Anonymous has today, but he stole most of it from Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if you look at the steps, all he did is change the word from alcoholic to gambler. And he did it all the way through. And I don't know what, I wasn't around then quite yet. And I don't know what Alcoholics Anonymous did about it, but I know in 1982 when Gamblers Anonymous came out with their third edition, they used a lot of the step material out of the 12 and 12. And Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't very happy with it. So they made Gamblers Anonymous cease and desist. They wanted them to destroy the book, but it was a shame to destroy it. So they had them put a disclaimer in the book and make them tell them, you can never reprint this book. Now, I'm a rare book dealer. That was my trade, rare books, collectible books, stuff like that. That book today is valuable. Try to find it. It's hard to find because a lot of people want it. I'm hoping someday Alcoholics Anonymous will say to us, go ahead and reprint that book. It's okay. Maybe they will. I don't know. Anyhow, Ray was very, very instrumental in Gamblers Anonymous. He became the international executive secretary for a while. He did everything. He was a salesman. He was out a lot, but he had a lot of free time, and he was able to do a lot of stuff. I'll tell you a little about myself, really, for a minute. I was a sick, sick, compulsive gambler. I grew up in a gambling environment in Brooklyn. My father ran an appliance shop where he'd taken toasters, but they had a crap game every night. So if you remember the kid in the schoolyard dealing the poker when you were 5 years old and shooting craps against the fence or whatever, that was me. And I would teach all the other kids how to shoot craps, how to play poker. We'd play for comic books. I was telling someone the other day, we even did something I never heard of before. We actually grabbed cockroaches and put numbers on them. All right? We draw a big circle and put a cube of sugar in the middle. And then we'd bet on whose number is going to get there first to the sugar. I mean, so if you see any cockroaches, any guys from New York, if you see any cockroaches running around, they're from us. Leftovers, maybe relatives, who knows. Anyhow, about the fourth meeting, there was a guy by the name of Don Kay that showed up. Don Kay, I actually met Don Kay. But Don Kay showed up at a meeting, and he became really, really involved. He would go everywhere to start meetings. He brought more people to Gamblers Anonymous than anybody ever thought of bringing in. But he never made the program himself. He could never stop gambling. I came to California in 1960, and he approached me at the card club, Don Kay. wanted to bring me to a Gamblers Anonymous meeting. I mean, I'm a smart, streetwise kid from Brooklyn. I thought he was trying to pick me up. I really didn't. I kept saying to him, hey, you know, I'm not interested in going. But I never really thought about it until I came on the program originally in 1982, and I mentioned that to someone. And they knew right away who Don Kaye was, and Don Kaye was no longer around by then. I did things like in 1971, we bought our first home, my wife and I. We had no furniture for an entire year. I came home one day, and I wouldn't buy furniture. I had plenty of money to gamble, but you don't use gambling money for buying furniture. I came home one day, and there's lumber all over the house. I said, "My, what are you doing?" She says, "I'm building a bed and a couch, because we slept on a mattress on the floor." I said, "What do you mean you're building a bed and a couch?" She says, "I'm going to build a bed and a couch." And she built the bed and the couch. And we used that bed that she built and that couch that she built for several years, because I wouldn't spend the money for a bed and a couch. I had a great business. I really did. I was in the antiquarian book business. Anybody know what an antiquarian bookseller is? Nobody? Well, there's some people who know, and I was an antiquarian bookseller. Had 4 bookstores in California. But without Alcoholics Anonymous, we would have no chance. You know, I have a lot of terrific friends on Gamblers Anonymous that are also Alcoholics Anonymous members, and I could tell right away who the Alcoholics Anonymous because they're so friendly. It's a different breed of person. It really is the alcoholic. So I thank you all for being alcoholics, and just like I thank these people for being alcoholics. I know that for a lot of us, life wouldn't be what it was today if it wasn't for Gamblers Anonymous. Gamblers Anonymous is really small still. We're in, right now, 57 countries. We have 3,800 meetings worldwide. Not a lot. Every state but Utah. I think the Mormons don't like gambling. So there's no gambling casinos in Utah that I know of, and no gamblers, no meetings. But we're growing. We have 2 international conferences a year. You guys, I hear, have one every 5 years. We have 2 a year. We used to have 4 a year when I first came on. You know what? We like to socialize. We like to drink, too. So, you know what I thought I was going to find here? I thought I was going to find poker games and crap games all over the place. When I first came on Gamblers Anonymous, a guy that was an AA and a GA member asked me if I wanted to go on a fishing trip to Catalina with him. And I'm not a fisherman. I don't even like to touch the bait. That's where I'm at. But he talked me into going on this fishing trip. And all the gamblers were drinking and all the alcoholics were gambling. I was nauseous on the back of the boat trying to keep from getting sick the whole time. That's really where I was at. I never went back. It just wasn't for me. But some of these guys go out every year on this fishing boat. I like the houseboats. They're nice and smooth here, and smooth water. And life today is incredible for me. I still have the gambling mentality. You know, all through the years that I was on Gamblers Anonymous, I would pit other members of GA into business. I'd put up the money, and I'd be their partner. We split the profits. I've done it at least 10, maybe 12 times through the years. And 7.5 years ago, I sold all my businesses, and I retired. And I was out to look at a load of books about 2 months ago. And the guy wouldn't sell them to me unless I bought everything in the house. And we're talking about a 5,000-square-foot house. So what do you think I did? I bought the entire house, everything in it, with no idea what I was going to do with it. I'm talking about washers and dryers and... It was the gambling mentality in me that did it, I know. And I ended up in 4 storage areas where I was paying $1,000 a month to store the stuff. And I decided, you know what? I'm moving it all over to a place where I can set it up and do an internet business or something. And that's what I just did. Right before I came here, I did the final move, and everything is over there. So when I get home, I have something to look forward to, going back to work. My wife thinks I'm a nutcase. But you know what? You got to keep busy. I hate the game of golf. A lot of people play golf. I hate the game of golf. I do the tournaments every year. We have a charity tournament. I used to make 3 holes and give it up. Head for the 19th hole. This last time, I made 13 holes. And would you believe I had 2 pars, which for me was 2 pars. I'm usually that. I get 10s, and then they tell me to pick it up and stick it in my pocket. So I do that, but... Gamblers Anonymous to me is a fantastic program. I come from a family where there were 8 kids, and 6 out of 8 were gamblers. I mean, 6 out of 8. And I mean compulsive gamblers. I have one brother that never had a job until he was 50 years old. And he filed his very first tax return at the age of 50. And he was an alcoholic, too. We were in business together, and he would drink out of a vodka bottle all day long. And you never saw him drunk. Ever saw him drunk. Because I think he was immune to it. But what was I saying? You get dizzy, you lose your train of thought. Anyhow, this particular brother, they said to him after he filed his first tax return at the age of 50, where have you been for the last 30 years? He said, well, I've been living on friends. Friends give me money, they give me a place to sleep, and he was able to get away with it. But there's been so many times when Alcoholics Anonymous has come into the lives of GA people, you know. There's been so many times where we refer even to Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous does things this way. They do it that way. We should do it the same way they do it. They're successful, and we're not successful. The one thing, though, like I said before, every time they change one little word in the combo book, it's like a big deal. And they need two votes to change it with two-thirds votes to change it, and it's things I fight. We use the Day at a Time book that from Hazleton. When they passed that, I was totally against it. Of course, they got words too big. Us gamblers don't understand big words. And some of them are... Anyhow, I don't know how much time. I don't want to overtalk. Did I overtalk? I have 3 minutes left. Can I tell you a joke or something? 3 minutes? No. I mentioned these guys look like the loan sharks I was into. I had 5 loan sharks. I tell you, there was one time I actually left the state of California in 1969 because the loan sharks were after me. I packed up during the middle of the night, my family, and we went to Oregon. And after 2 months, my old boss called me on the phone and said to me, Bob, I really need you back. And I said, Dick, I said, I got a problem. I'm into these loan sharks for a lot of money, and I can't come back because they'll get me. And he said, well, how much you owe him? I owed him $7,500, but I told him $10,000. And he said to me, come on back, and I'll take care of it. And I came back in 1969, and he gave me a check for $10,000 to pay off my loan sharks. I paid him off the $7,500, and I had $2,500 to go back to gambling. Great. But the loan sharks that I was into were guys that looked like the corner druggists, you know what I mean? The guy that ran the 7-Eleven store. They were not what you think about with the guys with the flat noses and the curly ears or like you see on television. It was nothing like that. They were businessmen. Would they ever hurt you? No. Why would they hurt you? They want their money back. That's all they really want. They just want... One guy said, I'm going to be afraid they're going to kill me or something. They're not going to kill you. The bookies might kill you, but the loan sharks, they don't do that. We just, if they kill you, they don't get their money back because they actually lent you money. So, anyhow, that it's been a great pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. And I can't say I'll be back, but thank you.
Let's give another round for our two speakers, please. I'd like to know how many people here are from Narcotics Anonymous. Could you raise your hand? Also, we have a fair representative. Good. Thank you for coming. And how many people here are from Gamblers Anonymous? And we're so happy to have you, too. And it's been so enlightening to us to be able to hear you because we do cooperate and we do need to know and we do hear stories in our rooms that entitle us to let you know that there are other fellowships that you can go to if you need their help. I think that we have the time to entertain some questions for either Narcotics Anonymous or Gamblers Anonymous if somebody would like to come up and ask a question. We have 2 knowledgeable people that would like to come up and share. Would you like to come up? Because they won't hear you if you speak from where you are. Come up. Could you come up and speak into the microphone? Because this is being taped. Just give us your first name and your last initial and ask your question, please. Let's limit it to like 2 minutes a question. Thank you.
My name's Neil. I'm an alcoholic and a compulsive gambler. And I'd just like to ask Bob, I know the history of GA. Sam J, he was an atheist, and he transferred the 12 steps of recovery from AA over to GA, but he missed out some vital things. There was one sentence in Alcoholics Anonymous that really gives it a direction. And that sentence is, having had a spiritual awakening. And in Gamblers Anonymous, they don't have that sentence. It's working the 12 principles, which doesn't give it direction, which makes it cherry-picking of the steps. And you mentioned how in GA, like, conference-wise, they take a is and a it and a the, and they mix it about and stuff. Is there any way forward of putting, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps back in?
My problem is I'm from Brooklyn. I don't understand a lot of that. So I don't follow a lot of what you said.
In step 12, in Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, yeah, it doesn't have that in GA.
As he mentioned, Sam Jay, who was one of the first ones on the program, was an atheist, and he asked Bill to take out the word God out of three of the steps. And he considered doing it and then changed his mind. That spiritual awakening was the trustees for Gamblers Anonymous. When they do their meetings, when they change their literature and so on, they decided they wanted to take that out too. A lot of people objected them taking that out. There's a lot of fighting about that. But they took it out, they voted, it takes a two-thirds vote, two votes, and they voted to take it out. I have a feeling one day it's going to be back in there. But for right now, it's out of there. I can't remember the exact terms of the 12. Look at the line here.
Okay.
My name is John A. My home group is Lunch Bunch in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And I got sober in 1978, so the NA was still, even though it had been close to 30 years old, it was still in infancy in Florida. I got very active in Narcotics Anonymous, and I learned about service through Narcotics Anonymous, but I got very active in Alcoholics Anonymous as well. And it's not so much a question as though, but the thing is that, you know, I learned that when I am in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, I am an alcoholic. I carry an Alcoholics Anonymous message. And I learned to do that by being active in Narcotics Anonymous. When I'm in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, I am an addict, and I carry a Narcotics Anonymous message. And that's something that, you know, I would like to see us do more often, because I know there, and as, yeah, thanks. But I owe it to Narcotics Anonymous because of that, and I am grateful for the foresight. And I honestly think that, you know, that's cooperation. You know, that is the true cooperation that we share with each other. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It saved my life. You know, it gave me the start. And, you know, and yet, and so, but the thing was that, like I said, but I know if I didn't have the fellowship, I would be dead. I'm sure of that. So, thanks.
I'm Robert. I'm an alcoholic and a gambler. Good to see you, Bob. I just want to say cooperation is key. I now introduce myself, even at AA meetings, as an alcoholic and a gambler. I have a lot of people who've come to me and say, you know, I'm also a gambler, but I don't want to go to that meeting. And I will find out later that they've been in casino when they relapse in both. There's just something about the surreal environment of a casino that is really, really insidious. I have a good friend of mine who was my original sponsor in Gambling Anonymous, and this lady has 44 years of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she had 9 years of sobriety in gambling, and she has recently relapsed, and she's over 70 years old. I mean, gambling is a really, really tough, and there's a trustee in California who has a lot of time in gambling, and she will tell people, gambling will kill you. And she's a nurse, and I mean, this lady is really intense about it. And Bob knows who I'm talking about. And she really carries that message, and I just want all of you know, because I'm addicted to everything but moderation. And if you know somebody, encourage him to see the movie Gambler, because I think it was really well done. I'll leave it to Bob. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Chris. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Pompano Men's Group in Pompano Beach, Florida. Yes. I came up here to share a little bit about my experience with other fellowships. I'm also a member of Cocaine Anonymous. And Cocaine Anonymous differs from a little bit from the other two fellowships that were represented here because we just used the big book of AA. You know, we didn't carbon copy it and try to change it. We just straight up hand the newcomers the big book. You know, we have our own literature too, some supplemental stories and stuff. But ours, I mean, we have no problem just substituting it in our minds. And I think that from where I'm from, at least, there's a little more, it's very open with the different fellowships. There's AA, CA, NA, GA, often sharing the same clubhouse. You know, in terms of cooperation, we even have, like, a volleyball tournament, Battle of the Fellowships, you know, where, you know, you go out and represent your fellowship and someone wins a trophy and it's held in the meeting house. And a message that I wanted to carry here tonight was that all too often, because I had problems with other substances, and when I came in, it was important for me to hear it in CA, and now not so much. I mean, Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life, and this is always going to be my number one fellowship. But I see in some AA meetings, you know, someone young or new like me coming out of a treatment center will go into an AA meeting and unknowingly share about drugs, you know, or those problems, and often they're almost chased out of the room. You know, a lot of times, rather than love and tolerance, they're greeted with intolerance. And if that happened to me at my first AA meeting, I would have never came back. If someone said, you can't talk about this here, you know, and get out, you know, like that. I think it's just important for us as alcoholics and practicing these principles of our program to realize that, yes, there are other fellowships that we can take someone aside and explain to him about how, you know, if an alcoholic walks into this meeting, never been to AA, they need to hear alcohol, not crack or heroin or whatever, gambling. So I just think that we need to remember it's always love and tolerance, you know, and always welcome the newcomer because we don't want to chase them away. Thank you for letting me share.
Hello. Hello. There we go. Hi, my name's Wendy. I'm a recovering pothead with a desire to stop drinking. That's why we have Marijuana Anonymous, because we got laughed out of the NA meetings. Serious, you get out of here. My home group is Noon Fellowship in AA in Syracuse, New York. I just started with friends the second Marijuana Anonymous meeting outside of New York City. And we're going to get to be more popular, I think. I just thought I'd let you know we're here. Thanks.
My name's Nancy. I'm an alcoholic from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. My home group is Group 60. And this is a question for NA. First, I need to explain where I'm coming from. I definitely respect all 12-step groups. I respect NA being NA. In Milwaukee, we are struggling, you could say, with our singleness of purpose in AA. On our way here, me and three other girls, we stopped at a meeting, and it was an open discussion meeting, which is great, you know, so there were people there from AA. One of the girls that were there are strictly NA. Now, take this as if this happened in Milwaukee, because it very much is the same thing that has happened in Milwaukee. And I try to be very tactful and write, take the person aside and say, no, you belong at a different meeting. This girl was saying things, though, like, with tears in her eyes and the pain in her heart, and I get that, about why can't you accept me? I feel the same depth of pain you feel. Just because I don't drink, why can't you accept me for the pain and help that I need? I understand why not. My question for you is to tell me, please, the correct way that you would deal with something like that, that you would, coming from NA, say to that person who is at an AA meeting and explain it to them. Could you tell me, coming from an NA perspective?
and I'm trying to. I will say when I worked in treatment, it's basically the same complaints that they were men came back from an AA meeting. And they were upset because they were asked by the group to group secretary not to speak about drugs. And they didn't understand. And I had to explain to them that AA is solely for alcohol, and out of respect, when you're in an AA meeting, you speak of your alcohol use. When you need, if you feel a need to talk about your drug use, you can go to the NA meetings. Mm-hmm. But it's respectful because, it's the primary purpose of each. Correct. In your situation, I might have said something to the group secretary, asked how you handle,
Put it in the perspective of this would be at my home group.
In your home group, how does your group feel?
Oh, no, we keep our singleness of purpose, but there are times some...
At our home group, we do keep the singleness of purpose very important. And I have asked people who are in NA or belong to be going in NA, on the side we would talk and say, this is why, and just everything you were saying. But one time there was a girl then who just said, well, then we're not even, and got very angry and upset. No, I didn't want that to happen. How do you deal with something like that? This person is hurting.
Well, I can't instill respect in anyone, and nor can you or I force anyone to go to a fellowship.
Right.
We can handle it the best say if it was me and I would happen to be there, I would probably bring the person to an NA meeting. How about if I take you and introduce you? So maybe a volunteer from the NA helpline in Milwaukee would be willing to take this one.
Mile.
Yeah. I mean, I've done that, but.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm a recovering alcoholic. My name is Rick. My home group is the Free to Be Me group in Clearwater, Florida. My sobriety date is... June 10th, 1988. Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. I am very grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. But all of those little crutches that I brought with me when I came into AA became full-blown addictions, and it's not the only fellowship I go to. I'm a proud member of Overeaters Anonymous because I don't have control over certain things. And I'm very grateful for that fellowship because it's given me the ability to live a life worth living. I've sat in AA meetings going, why do I feel like an alien? How come that person who's got 2 years is happy, joyous, and free, and I'm miserable? Because I was active in another addiction. I'm not going to go any further with that. I'm very grateful for this. My question is, I see that there are two other fellowships here. My question is, how do those fellowships get up there? How do you create a relationship with AA that is helpful? Clarice, you shared about how AA will allow any fellowship to take the steps and take the traditions and only alter those two things. And for that, I'm grateful. How do we get other fellowships to be more helpful and more connected to AA in general? I'd like to see more people up there. I know that for a fact that there are trustees from other 12 sub-fellowships here at this convention because they're alcoholics as well who would be very welcome up there. I know that for myself, I sometimes struggle with the singleness of purpose because so many people go out because of drugs. I sit there and watch people scratching off, $100 worth of scratch-offs in the meeting, and I'm going, is that happy, joyous, and free? Is maybe our singleness of purpose not helpful? Or maybe there's a way for us to say, there are other problems besides alcohol, the other parts of our ism. So how do we get up other members of fellowships up here, and how do we befriend AA in a way to be supportive and helpful to everyone? Thank you.
Thank you. Cookie alcoholic. We're very careful to cooperate with our friends, and very often, a gentleman walked up to me and he said, I'm starting a 12-step fellowship, and that's fine. If there are enough people that wish to go to that, and if we can help him by letting him use our 12 steps and our 12 traditions, we're only too happy to do that. But we practice the singleness of purpose, because it says in our literature, shoemaker, stick to thy last. If we try to be everything to everybody, it doesn't work. If we try to maintain our recovery from alcoholism, it seems to work. We have a room full of people, and we have thousands of people attending this conference. So, you know, if I'm a vegetarian, I'm not going to go to eat a Big Mac or to go to a place where they're offering Big Macs. Not that I have anything against them, but that's not my thing. If I'm an alcoholic, I need to hear about alcohol. If I'm a drug addict, I need to hear about drugs. It's one addict, one alcoholic sharing with another. It's very clear. I didn't get sober because you knew more than me. I got sober because you were like me. And I was able to relate to you and say, oh yeah, I feel like that too. You know? And if that affects you in that fashion, and we all know what that means, in another fellowship, then by all means, let's be friendly with our friends. Let's try and spread the message. And if we can be helpful to any other fellowship, we're more than happy to do that. Thank you.
My name is Lynn, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm an addict, and I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm a compulsive debtor and spender, and I'm a sex and love addict, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. So my question, I guess, is a thank you to both of you. And I also have the same feeling that I wish we could have some more people up there. And I wish that the convention could have meetings where alcoholics who are having problems with gambling or sex or food could go to a meeting of another program while they're here in a sort of non-threatening environment. I understand the singleness of purpose, but when I introduce myself in an AA meeting, and I have 35 years clean and sober and abstinent, I say my name is Lynn and I'm an alcoholic and an addict. If I'm in an AA meeting, I say I'm an addict and an alcoholic. And I get a lot of people who come and talk to me about their other addictions after meetings. And I feel like part of my responsibility to all my programs is that I help other people find their way there. And there are a lot of people in this room that are in a lot of pain around their other addictions and need our help. And I really feel like we need to balance the interests of a singleness of purpose. I see very few young people coming in these days who are only addicted to alcohol or only addicted to one particular drug. Most of us are pretty poly-addicted. And I just encourage AA to continue to come up against this, because I think it's a difficult question for all of us who really work a deep program to figure out how to be of the most service. And when I tell my story, I tell all my stories. So thank you very much.
Hey friends, James C., Buffalo, New York, alcoholic. I have a question. I'm actually one of those people who came to AA and had very few problems other than alcohol. If I went to it for my first AA meeting and the singleness of purpose wasn't paid close attention to, I would have not been able to relate and identify. The fact that my family owns a company that tests for drugs of abuse through urine probably helped my non-experimentation other things. My question is this. I'm actually currently, was working with a guy for a while. He currently has about 3 years away from a drink and has about 8 days away from a substance other than alcohol. And for as long as I've known him and worked for him, he's never seemed to be able to put together more than 6 months or so. And the reason why I was willing to work with the guy in the first place is I sat down and I qualified him, and I thought it was very important in Alcoholics Anonymous to sit down and talk to the guy about their drinking and take him through the doctor's opinion, the first couple of chapters of our literature, to make sure if he relates and identifies as being an alcoholic, and he did. My question is this. If you, in your personal experience of 31 years, have found that sometimes people tend to have, while they can qualify for both fellowships, whether it be Narcotics Anonymous or Alcoholics Anonymous, if it might be best suited for them to be in one over another because of what they're seeming to have the most amount of struggle with and kind of like shoot the alligator that's closest to the boat, so to speak, I'd like to hear maybe a little bit more of your personal experience regarding this topic. Thanks.
Honestly, I'm going to give you what I used to do in treatment. People would say basically that they didn't have their drug of choice, whether it was alcohol, coke, heroin, pot. And I'd say, okay, you have four rooms, and each room is, you know, whatever alcohol you drank, whatever coke, pot, heroin, full, pure, the best. But you only get to choose which room, which one you're choosing.
Well, I'm Bob, and in the order in which I made that admission, that I'm Bob, I'm a compulsive overeater and an alcoholic. And as I've heard said, it takes a community to raise an alcoholic. It's taken a whole community of 12-step programs. I've also abused my credit line. I don't belong in casinos. And I've used substances, every one of them, to make me feel different than I did, that are probably illegal and would land me an overnight stay in one of the city lockups. So I think one of the struggles that I sometimes have, when I went to my very first meeting of Overeaters Anonymous, I was, and someone suggested go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Well, that was quite a struggle in Albany, New York at the time to find and work a job, too. And they said, well, you can also go to open meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful that I was able, without sharing the gory details of my binges, and that I was able to absorb enough about the life of addiction at meetings, that I eventually came to this very clear realization that I belonged in AA as well, and they also helped me come to realize what it meant to be an addict in these other fellowships. And I think the only thing I sometimes struggle with today is how to properly censor my story, because I never had a binge or a drunk that originated in a cipher. None of them started in isolation. Something else was going on. I'll shut up. So I'm just so grateful today that the groups I go to, I'm a member of Carried a Message in St. Louis, Missouri. I'm so grateful that they are welcoming to people that are not just solely addicted to one.
How's everybody doing today? My name is Nick, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. And as my dad says, I'm also addicted to more of everything. I come from Luna County, Deming, New Mexico, the sobriety capital of the world. There's approximately 15,000 people in Luna County, and there's one NA meeting. And I've been listening to you guys, and everybody has a solution. Oh, just go to an NA meeting. A lot of times, the AAs, we get hit with a lot of the court kids coming to get their paper signed for the drugs. And we try to be flexible, but it's a real struggle. And there's some meetings that will alienate them and they just won't go. And then there's other meetings that will welcome them. My home group is the Band of Brothers in Columbus, New Mexico, and it's held on Saturdays at 4:00. If you're ever down in Columbus, after the meeting, we go to Palomas, Mexico, and have dinner. So if you guys are ever down that way, come and see us. But my question is, you know, I've heard them read the preamble for NA, and they talk about alcohol in NA, saying alcohol is a drug. So if all roads lead to the same place, you know, if you're in a rural area, I mean, how much choice do you really have, you know? All roads lead to the same place. And I hate to see these kids coming and going They are in a lot of pain, and sometimes there's very few, but sometimes there's serious ones that want it, and they get ran off because, you know. So if anybody has any feedback on that, I would appreciate it. Before I leave, I got a joke for you guys. All right? This is going to take 30 seconds. How can you tell when two AAs are on their second date? There's a moving van in the driveway. How can you tell where they're on their fourth date? They're in divorce court.
G'day everyone, my name's Jetta and I'm an alcoholic. Sobriety date is 2nd of January 91. My home group's in a little village in Australia and I'm very clear what I am today. I'm an alcoholic. I did smoke some pot and when I was drinking, when I was drunk and watching Cheech and Chong and I nearly burnt the house down. And I thought that gets me into a lot of bother and I'm never going to do it again. I made a decision and I never did it again. So when I came into AA, I had to get someone to sit down with me and help me get very clear what my physical craving is deep down within. I came to see I had no choice with alcohol and because I choose to put pot down and other things. And so what I do in Australia, I run workshops not far from where I live. I can have from 10 to 30 people. It takes 5 or 6 months. I have addicts, heroin addicts, gamblers, you name it, they're there. And I can hear their craving going through that doctor's opinion as outlined in the big book. You know, I suffer with a physical craving once I take a drink. And then what the heroin addicts taught me was their craving happens after. That's why they called it a fix. So I learned all these things from the different people and once I can take them through the steps, I can then direct them into their own fellowship so they can share their experience, strength and hope. And it's just so simple. You know, I've been given a beautiful message that was outlined in the first 103 pages of that book. And, you know, I live an amazing life today, travelling around. I'm over here for 6 weeks. I come here every year and in different parts of America for you people to give me more and I take it back home and give it away. And that's what this fellowship's about. I feel very sad when I hear young people and other people trapped in fellowships they don't belong in because they don't grow spiritually. And this is about, for me, accepting, assessing a power deep down within that keeps me sober and gives me a wonderful life today of living in total abundance. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Nika. I'm an alcoholic from Savannah, Georgia. I just wanted to raise a little bit of awareness about my family life and the type of addiction that my family of six is suffering through right now. I've recently become addicted, and it may sound funny, but it's very disabling. My husband and all four of my children have it, and it is a mental addiction to things electronic and the internet and video games. And it makes me so upset when I think about it and I talk about it. Because I try so hard to teach my children to do other things and play outside nowadays, and I feel like I have to twist their arm, and my four-year-old just cries when I tell her to come to lunch to eat. And my husband is addicted to role-playing games online for hours and hours every day. And I'm hoping that by just talking today a little bit about it and raising awareness that people will realize how terrible this can be. He will wear headphones, and I can't even talk to him. You know, my children don't want to eat. They cry. And that's what they do when they first wake up. They run to the computer and play their Minecraft. And I'm wondering if you're aware of any, like, official groups that might cater to such types of addictions. I had heard at one point there was a group of wives who met, who all divorced their husbands who were addicted to online role-playing games. But I don't know if that's an official group or not. But I was wondering if you're aware of like a 12-step group that might be specifically geared towards like internet or gaming addiction, because I know that would very much help my family.
Please, we have
Hi, I'm Teresa. I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I just wanted to share one thing and ask a question. In my home group, there was a meeting one time, and an addict came into the meeting. It's a little emotional. But anyways, so an addict came into the meeting, and this isn't a meeting that has a podium like this, and people get up and share. And this addict cut up, and he stood at the podium, and he said, "Hi, my name's so-and-so. I'm an addict. I smoke crack all the time. I'm not an alcoholic. I can have 1, 2, 3 drinks and quit." That is going to kill an alcoholic. And so that is one of my experiences with this. You know, we need to keep our singleness of purpose. My other question is, I didn't know that NA was so big. I think that's great. And we also have, you know, courts, judges in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, sending addicts to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you said that you've dealt with that and actually sought out, like, judges and courts and to get people, judges, to send them to the right programs. I'm just wondering if you could share how you did that, or maybe you could give me some of your contact information so that I can try to maybe do something like that in Wisconsin.
Actually, for the drug courts, the local service structure, I guess you have CPCs or you have PI committees. It's suggested that they talk to the drug court coordinator, and he sets up a meeting with the judge. In NA, that's what we do. You know, and ours mostly comes from they send too many and they overwhelm groups, particularly in rural areas. And, you know, the meetings are small and then 20 court cards come in. So I've learned that the drug court coordinator has the most influence on the drug court. And you know, can inform the judge. But most times, they're very willing. The ones I meet at a conference. But NA's had published a bulletin on it just because so many come in and they want their slip signed, and it was kind of disruptive, and members were unaware how to handle this. So if you have a local service committee, they might be able to help you in AA. Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, everybody. My name is Terry, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. And I'm from Long Island, New York. Jones Beach Sunrise Group is my home group. My question is to NA. Very quickly, 10 years ago, I lost a son in a motorcycle accident. I was sober for a period of time, had no program. And then I had a son who came home as a heroin addict because he couldn't cope with the loss of his brother, his best friend. And in the course of trying to get him sober, he turned around and says, "You know, Pops, you got a problem too. You drink too much." We ended up getting my kid into a detox, and I was told I needed to go to Al-Anon because addiction is a family disease. And I go to Al-Anon, and my first Al-Anon meeting, I realized that I was the tornado in the home, not my addict. And I decided to get sober. And I went to Al-Anon. Al-Anon basically changed my life. And in Al-Anon, you know, they asked my addict to go to 90 and 90. I went to Al-Anon, but I found Naranon. Naranon is to Narcotics Anonymous like Al-Anon is to AA. I know in Al-Anon and AA, there's a lot of cooperation between them. We have Al-Anon speakers. Sometimes when we do the chapter to the wives, we'll have a wife come in and do it. We don't have that cooperation on Long Island with Narcotics Anonymous. In Suffolk County, I'm the Suffolk area chair for Naranon. And in Suffolk County, there are 8,000 addicts to go to meetings in a week. Now, it's said that an alcoholic or an addict affects 5 people. If we have 8,000 members going to meetings in Narcotics Anonymous, there should be, I don't know, 40,000 people going to Naranon. We have less than 200 members in all of the county. When we have an NA speaker come in and they read our little blue book, they sit there and say, "Boy, I wish my mom knew about this program." I'm right now trying to have a share-a-day where we have members from Narcotics Anonymous and Naranon members each share on a common topic, And then we open it up for Sharon. And Narcotics Anonymous isn't willing to work with us. The addicts on their own will come to our programs. But we can't. If we could just get one meeting a month in Narcotics Anonymous and share what Naranon does, if the addict goes and learns his 12 steps, and the family goes and learns their 12 steps in Naranon, when we come home, we have a language that we understand. You know, we send the addict off to rehab, and we want them to get straightened out, and they tell the addict it's people, places, and things. And a lot of times, we're the first place they come home is the people, places, and things there haven't changed because they're not getting the message of Naranon. So my question is to you. I feel like I'm talking to corporate headquarters here. My heart's desire is for more cooperation between Narcotics Anonymous and Naranon. My son that got me into this program 4 years ago was killed, not because of drinking or using drugs. He was sober, and he got run over by a car and left for dead. Okay? I still come to the fellowship. I still, because my 12-step says, if I don't give this away, I can't keep it. There needs to be more. Al-Anon and AA, they work together. We need more from Narcotics Anonymous. Please, please help us.
Actually, I think that perhaps you can call the office, because I'm not so sure I understand what you really want. I know when we had the World Convention, we just had ours, it was out of the country this year in Brazil, we had Naranon was there. So, and I know that some groups, like meeting I went to on Sundays in East Hartford, Connecticut, has one room is NA, one room's Naranon, and then either once a month or on their anniversaries, they have a speaker from each. So I'm not too sure what it is that we can't impose even at from LA down to the groups on Long Island. It would have to be one of the groups being willing to call or send us an email, and hopefully we can provide some experience.
Hi, Cookie. How you doing? My name is Boyce, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm also one of those rare creatures who had no experience of drugs, only alcohol. So when I got to New York, I was like, I simply hadn't much experience, certainly with anything except alcohol. And I had 20 years of active addiction, most of it daily, and I was a blackout drinker. But the fact of the matter is, I knew nothing about drugs, but as it happened, as I came into AA, the young people in the neighborhood in which I came into AA in New York City scooped me up and started teaching me the program. Well, this young people's group was an extraordinary group in that it was 1970. And it was, all those youngsters had experience with drugs and alcohol, and they felt like they were lying if they didn't mention it when they were qualifying, and so and they belonged to a group called Manhattan Group, and the Manhattan Group had some wonderful old timers who wouldn't let them say the word drugs, or at least they wouldn't let them talk about it. Mention drugs at all. So they, with a coffee pot and a resentment, went all, several blocks up the avenue and started their own meeting and called it Young People's Group to keep those old-timers away. And they knew that they were on dangerous territory. Some of them had some experience of AA, and they knew that it was terribly important that the Young People's Group function within the traditions of AA. And yet they were absolutely insistent that they had to have open beginners meetings, open step meetings, and open, well, that is the basic thing that they were into. And so they started having, it was the first, an intergroup wouldn't let them list open step meetings or beginners meetings. They claimed that you had to have some experience with AA. But the Young People's Group went ahead and started having open meetings, inviting anybody who was interested in the 12 steps of AA to come and hear AA members talk about their traditions and how they function and how they guide them in their relationships amongst themselves and with other 12-step programs. And so the Young People's Group thought of themselves as instructors for other 12-step people, because the other 12-step people had relatively no knowledge of our traditions or experience of our traditions. So they eagerly welcomed other 12-step people. I was a youngster. I mean, I had no experience with drugs, but I was fortunate in that I got to hear a lot of what AA is about, that AA doesn't do anything impulsively that affects other groups. It holds group conscience meetings and makes decisions that addresses the broader AA membership. And so I was delighted with that early experience of how AA works in regard not only to its steps, but to its traditions. 15 years later, when I left Manhattan and moved over to Brooklyn, that's enough then. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Gideon. I'm an alcoholic from Brooklyn, New York. Yes, right on. I've been sober in AA since 1996. I'm also a member of GA. I haven't placed a bet since 2009. I've also attended probably seven other 12-step groups at one point or another, but I found there's not enough time in the day to go to more than two regularly. I also have met very, very few people in AA who have not had experience with drugs. And I've had an argument about this with a lot of people. I'm very passionate about this topic because I can't tell my story without mentioning drugs. It doesn't make sense. It's like an edited version. And I do believe in showing respect to AA. So I have figured out ways of telling my story. I'll give you an example. I say things like, you know, I only smoked pot once from 1979 to 1996. You know, and we have to be welcoming. I really believe that, like the gentleman just said before, you know, that he's a rare person who's only drank in nowadays AA. There's also another issue I have with this is in Bill and Bob's story, they actually both talk about drugs. So I very much believe in showing respect for AA and emphasizing alcohol, but I think to say you can't mention other drugs is really not – I don't think it's appropriate to say you can't mention them. I think you can mention them in a way that is very respectful to AA and respectful to other alcoholics. But as I said, I have strong feelings about that. Thank you.